Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Byrne et al. Titled, Environmentally Persistent Free Radicals Compromise Left Ventricular Function During Ischemia Reperfusion Injury. This article published May 1, 2015, as part of our call for papers on cardiovascular responses to environmental stress. My guests today are editor Lauren Wolds, lead author Kurt Varner, and content expert Kevin Lord. Let's get started.
It is well accepted that exposure to particulate matter has potentially devastating results in the cardiovascular system, particularly in susceptible individuals. This manuscript from Kurt Varner's group investigated the role of environmentally persistent free radicals, or EPFRs, in increasing cardiac vulnerability to subsequent MI injury. Interestingly, the data presented in this manuscript suggests that inhalation of EPFRs can exacerbate the deficits in LV function produced by subsequent MI reperfusion injury. Kurt, tell us about why you did this study.
The study was done and is follow-up for some of the previous studies we'd shown where we looked at EPFRs and their effects on the cardiovascular system. Previously, we've shown that EPFRs can decrease cardiovascular function even in healthy individuals. And that led us to question whether the EPFRs would have a greater effect in an animal that already had pre-existing cardiovascular disease. So we wanted to look at the myocardial injury because of the link between oxidative stress and cardiac injury and the oxidative stress produced by these particles in the environment.
Great. Thank you very much. Tell us a little bit about how you actually exposed the animals to the EPFRs.
Unlike some of our previous studies, we used a nose-only exposure system in which the animals were exposed to a stream of air which contained the particles after nebulization. So the animals would breathe in these particles, and it was more of a natural or real-world type exposure as compared to intratracheal instillation in which the particles are placed right in the airways of the animal.
So, Kevin, tell us about what you find are some of the major strengths of Kurt's study.
What I believe to be some of the major strengths is, one, is the way the exposure was actually delivered. And the fact that it is through inhalation versus intratracheal reduces the potential for outside influences, as was previously noted. So the idea that we're trying to look at the individual components of air pollution to identify which free radicals or which components, which parameters may actually be contributing the most to inflammatory mediators and or oxidative stress, changes in contractility, changes in heart function, and or increasing susceptibility to very specific disease patients is extremely important. As we change the type of vehicles we drive, as we change the way we produce our energy, the general overall mix of our air pollution and the components of our air pollution are going to change.
Excellent. Thank you, Kevin. That was a great summary. Kurt, so this brings me to a couple questions. One is, talk to us a little bit about the exposure levels that you and I may see to these EPFRs.
The actual exposure level to EPFRs that's in the environment on a day-to-day basis varies. One of the big problems we have with the EPFRs is prolonged persistence. These things will last for weeks and months in the air. So once they're there, they're quite persistent, which is a scary thought in themselves. If you want to put into actual particle number how many you breathe at any given time, that's really kind of difficult to tell. What we've done is tried to match the particle number in our exposure system to mimic what goes on in the real world. The exposures in this study equate to a human being exposed to about 200 microgram per meter cubed, which is pretty high level. It's very dirty air, but it's not within the realm of what you would see in the environment. Places in China or India get to 600, 700, 800 every now and then. So 200 is dirty, but it's not that big of a stretch compared to a lot of studies.
That's an excellent point. I know there was a recent report suggesting that in certain areas of China, the levels were over 700 micrograms, high pollution, but regular day. So also, what do you suggest are the potential mechanisms whereby these particles are actually interacting with the myocardium during ischemia reperfusion?
There's several possibilities to that, and we're really not exactly sure. We know that the particles produce oxidative stress, at least systemically, that there is oxidative stress. And this can affect the heart because of these bloodborne features that come out of the lungs. The particles themselves may also contact the heart and cause problems. The fact that they're an efferent capable of generating a free radical may further enhance the particles' ability to damage the myocardium. Our study also suggests that maybe there's a potential for heart rate variability or autonomic dysfunction because in our animals after the infarct, they weren't able to compensate. A normal animal that had, or an animal that had been had surgery, had an infarct but hadn't been exposed to the particles, they were able to compensate for the loss of cardiac damage, for the damage that was occurred in the heart. The animal that had been exposed to the EPFRs previously was not able to do this compensatory mechanism. And we think that autonomic dysfunction may play into that, that there's a change in the sympathetic-parasympathetic balance to favor the sympathetic side, and that this prevented the increase in contractility that the non-exposed animal was able to generate.
Excellent. Very interesting. What are your next steps? What do you anticipate this project leading you to?
Well, the next step we want to do is we want to look at the role of heart rate variability. The animals in this study were not instrumented to look at that. We currently have some animals that are. So we're looking at the role that heart rate variability and autonomic dysfunction may play into this phenomenon that we saw, this lack of ability to compensate. The other thing we're really interested in is our model was an individual who had been exposed and then had subsequently suffered a myocardial infarction. It happens quite often, but the real question is what happens to those people that have had an infarct previously, have existing cardiovascular disease? What would happen to them if they become exposed over long periods of time? So we're now looking at a model where we infarct the animals, we wait several weeks, and then start exposing them to the particles to see what the effect on the system is then. We also would like to get to longer exposure periods. The nature of our particle forces us to use short exposures. We'd like to go to a 3 to 4, 5, 6 hour exposure, which is more like what a human would experience in the environment.
Excellent points. How about gender differences? Have you looked at males versus females?
That's a really good point, and we haven't gotten to that point yet. So far, we focused on males, but we have studies. We're actually switching to mice to try to make some of this a little bit easier with longer exposures, and females are definitely in the mix for that.
Great. Kevin, what does this study add to the literature?
So what I believe this paper contributes to the literature is that, one, it once again, it begins to identify single components to air pollution and potential causes. It also suggests and or identifies multiple theories for the potential cardiovascular response that is seen at this particular dose using this particular type of delivery method. So whether it is potentially heart rate variability and or what type of disease models and or potential patient populations that might be susceptible are able to now be questioned and or tested against this specific EPFR, or environmentally persistent free radical.
Thanks, Kevin. That brings up an interesting point. How does this research fit into some of the newer modes that people are using tobacco products, such as e-cigarettes and cigarillos, etc.?
That's an interesting question because the entire concept or idea of environmentally persistent free radicals is that they do persist for an extended period of time. And as we see changes in smoking and in e-cigarettes now, we are now just starting to understand and identify some of the components to e-cigarettes and whether or not they are or are not problematic with cardiovascular and or pulmonary disease. And some of the initial findings have shown that some of the components to e-cigarettes can linger for days, not firsthand, not secondhand, but essentially third-hand smoke and or components of that smoke that can be found on clothing and or on tables that when you walk by and touch and or come in contact with the material again, re-exposes you to that particulate matter.
Excellent. Thank you. Kurt, anything to add?
There's also sources of EPFRs are being identified now, too. They've actually been identified in soils. soils and Superfund sites where various toxic chemicals are able to react with each other and other elements in the soil, so, which raises a question of windblown efforts too. So they're coming to be in a lot of different places. We haven't looked in the e-cigarettes actually to see if there's an EPFR there, but based on the fact that it's a pyrolysis product, we probably will find them. I wouldn't be surprised if they're in there, which again raises a whole new problem. Cigarettes themselves, we know cigarette smoke has EPFRs in it. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, and it's really going to aid in risk assessment as we move forward.
Thank you. That was an excellent addition. And I think that your work is perfectly in line with the NIEHS's concept of delineating the roles of different airborne particulates in the heart, and also in how this relates to other clinically related exposure paradigms. So thank you very much for your excellent addition to the literature. Thank you, Kurt, and thank you, Kevin, once again for joining us today for this lively discussion, and I know that you'll all enjoy this article by Byrne and Varner in the latest issue of AJP Heart. So back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.